In October 2024, the NFL and Roc Nation re-upped their deal. They agreed to continue their five-year partnership to work together on the league's entertainment and music, specifically for the Super Bowl halftime show, and for the league's social justice through its Inspire Change initiative. It's not a surprise that the deal continued. It seems like both sides are pretty happy with how things have been going. But if we take a step back and remember where things were just 6 years ago, it's still impressive that this happened in the first place. The NFL was in a very different spot. There was a lot more public pressure around how the league dealt with concussions, how it dealt with its players committing domestic violence against their partners, spouses, and others, and how it handled Colin Kaepernick's decision to kneel during the national anthem, and all of the questions that that raised around where the league truly stood on police brutality and social justice. And on the Jay-Z side of things, the Roc Nation founder was not one to mince words about how he felt about the NFL, how it treated its players, and his own decisions to turn down the Super Bowl. So it's a great opportunity to talk about everything that led up to this point, how the past 5 years have gone, up and down, and what to expect moving forward, especially now that we're in this place where people are upset that one rapper is headlining the Super Bowl halftime show and it's not another rapper that's doing it instead. To break it all down, I'm joined by Empire State of Mind author, my guy, Zach O'Malley Greenberg. We discuss all of this and a few other aspects too, including the halftime show sponsorship agreement with Apple Music, what that means, what the league was looking for there, and how all of this fits together with what many people still consider to be the biggest stage in entertainment. Hope you enjoy this one. Let's dive in. This episode of Trapital is brought to you by Splice, a creative platform for musicians and producers, celebrating human creativity with powerful workflow tools for sound discovery. Splice is home to the world's leading catalog of sounds and samples. Splice is an essential tool for music creators, fueling the top 100, and can be heard in some of 2024's biggest hits. Subscribe today and elevate your music production. All right, today we're going to talk about the Roc Nation NFL partnership, which is just renewed for another 5 years. So it's a perfect time to break it down with my guy, Zach O'Malley Greenberg. Welcome back, man.
Great to be here in person, no less. Yeah, good stuff.
I know. Good timing as well. We obviously have seen the past few Roc Nation Super Bowls. They just renewed this deal. And we've now had five Super Bowls that they've done since Jay-Z and the team have been in charge. Did you think that we would have went through five Super Bowls and we wouldn't have seen Jay-Z himself?
Or Beyonce. I mean, I think that's the wildest part of this whole situation. That was the first thing everybody thought. You know, it's going to be, what, are they just going to alternate?
On the run three, right?
Yeah, exactly. When you really think about it from Jay-Z's perspective, being able to have that sort of ace up your sleeve, or two, really, if you want to think about it, both Jay-Z and Beyonce, to kind of jump in, if you don't get who you wanted, it's a great negotiating tactic, right? You just know that whatever happens, it's going to be fine. And I think that empowers you as an organizer of this incredibly massive event to just go for whoever, you know, who, not that that would have been very difficult anyway, to get whoever it was to play the Super Bowl, but just that knowledge that, you know, you can always fall back on yourself or Beyonce, I think that's got to really help with the negotiations.
Yeah, it's also interesting that Jay-Z got to this point, especially in the late 2010s with where Jay-Z was and where the NFL was, because on Jay-Z's side, there were some strong critical statements that were made. I think it was around 2017, Bob McNair, who would own the Houston Texans, had made some comment about you can't have the inmates running the prison. And that was his analogy talking about the players. Jay-Z heard that and talked about, hey, our guys are, I'm not quoting this verbatim, but our guys are out there getting injured and you're making analogies talking about us as inmates. And it reminded people of that clear dynamic where this is a league where a majority of the players are black, a majority of the owners are white, and there had already been people that felt like there were black plantation similarities to how this whole structure works in general. And of course, you had the line that he had in Ape Shit with Beyonce from their 2018 album, Everything is Love, where he's like, I said no to the Super Bowl, you need me, I don't need you. And then you have the NFL side of it too, because they had some huge PR challenges with how they dealt with the Colin Kaepernick situation with social justice, how they dealt with domestic violence and a lot of the challenges that had happened in the league with like Ray Rice and other players, and additionally how they dealt with concussions too. So the league was in a very interesting spot. Jay-Z was in a very critical spot. So the fact that we're now having this conversation less than 10 years afterward is still crazy in terms of just how much things change.
Jay-Z had been methodically building toward something like this, right? If you go all the way back to 2003, when he first created his Rucker Park basketball tournament dream team, where he had LeBron and Shaq who were going to come in the last minute and, you know, be his surprise superstars on this team, which already had like Tracy McGrady and all these other players on it. That was kind of like his biggest foray into professional sports, which, you know, then helped him get close to all these basketball players and to, you know, further in on basketball, which helped him get his piece of the Nets. Then being involved in owning the team, owning a piece of that stadium, starting Roc Nation Sports, representing, you know, not just basketball players, but then NFL stars, baseball players, started to get him closer to the NFL. As you're looking over, you know, like a decade before this deal came to fruition, you know, more than a decade, he was kind of putting the chess pieces into position. It's always fascinating to watch him. Did he know specifically that that was what he wanted to build toward? But in any case, the pieces have being assembled for, you know, over a decade, quite a long time.
The interest in sports was there. And even when he sold that Nets ownership, there was still part of this that you thought, okay, there could be some play eventually, because the agency has obviously been doing its thing. So it gives you the platform to have this type of opinion. But then of all people, Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, is then the one that reaches out to Jay-Z and is like, hey, we have a issue. We're not tackling this social justice thing properly. We need you. And then that's when a lot of these conversations start. And even then, again, unpopular time with where things are happening with the NFL. But I feel like there was also some responses to what people were seeing in two ways. People looked at the Super Bowl halftime show as a product, and there were definitely question marks that people had. They looked at the show, specifically the one that happened in 2019, where Maroon 5 had performed in Atlanta, and then you had Travis Scott come out, and then Big Boi from Outkast, it came out as well. There were parts of that show that I thought were cool, and I'm not saying that a group like Maroon 5 was undeserving of that stage. They're clearly one of the biggest acts of the past, you know, what, 20 plus years, but still, it felt like there was something off.
It's a little corny, and especially when you look at also just the makeup of the league, like you were talking about. And then you look at, you had five white headliners in a row. It doesn't reflect the demographics of the league. It doesn't reflect the demographics of the country, of the fan base, of the world, et cetera. I think that that was one place where Jay-Z was able to make an immediate impact. You know, I think that's been another thing bubbling up through the NFL as well.
If you remove Beyonce from the performers, it's probably even more than however many performers in a row. Beyonce's the one saving the day here, right? She came out at the Super Bowl that was in New Orleans when the lights went out, when, you know, the Destiny's Child came out, and then she came out at Super Bowl 50, the one in San Francisco, with Coldplay and Bruno Mars, and some people still think about that as the Beyonce Super Bowl. I'm not saying that Lady Gaga or Katy Perry or Justin Timberlake didn't have good ones, but there was still a difference, and I think Jay-Z saw this himself because he was someone that was clearly reached out to. I don't know if he was reached out to as a headliner, but he knew what the experience was like. So they have this press conference in September 2019. It's Goodell, it's Jay-Z, they're the ones talking the most, and then you had Desiree Perez from Roc Nation. Jay talked about some of the clear changes they wanted to make with this. He talked about the selection process and how they would reach out to a bunch of people, and then you do that, you're more likely to potentially like cut off ties if one person reaches out and then they say yes, and then you gotta go back to this other person, and this other person's like, oh, sorry, someone else already said yes, but maybe we can reach out next year. Like, that's not how you do business, right? Like, that's just not how you do things effectively. And there was an opportunity to have things that tie into potential city themes, but there was a way to just think about the curation of this, and who better to do that with than an artist that has actually been on that side of it.
And the credibility that he brings, you know, if you get a call from Jay-Z, saying, hey, will you do the Super Bowl? And you know that you're the first name on his list, or at least as far as you know, you're the only one under consideration right now. That's pretty powerful, and it definitely feels a lot bigger than something coming from Roger Goodell, or I don't even know if Roger Goodell is the one making the phone call. You know, it seems unlikely.
Relationships are so key with this. We saw it happen with Rihanna herself. She said no back in the late 2010s. I forget what year it is. And then she ends up doing the Super Bowl in 2023, the one that was in Phoenix. What's the difference? The guy that signed her 20 years ago is the guy that's in charge of it. Like, that makes a difference.
And I think before, if you look at who did the Super Bowl, and we'd have to go back and check, but I think in most cases, it's somebody who was actively trying to promote something. Or maybe, you know, maybe they organized whatever it was around the fact that they'd be doing the Super Bowl. But I don't think Rihanna was doing anything. Like, you know, when was the last time she put out music?
Yeah.
I think she was about to have her first kid, and so she wasn't going to be touring anytime soon. Or
yeah, Justin Timberlake did it in 2018. That was like Man of the Woods era. Justin Timberlake. Coldplay, I feel like they're always kind of doing stuff. 2016, 2017, Gaga, I feel like she was starting to transition into acting with like A Star Is Born and stuff. So yeah, there was always a bit more of a promotional element. And sometimes they even went to stars, frankly, maybe a little too early. Like Katy Perry did in 2015. She'd had maybe like 4 years of like a solid catalog. That feels early. That'd be like having Olivia Rodrigo do the Super Bowl right now.
I would kind of flip it, and I would say they did Katy Perry too late. They should have done her.
Really?
Yeah, peak teenage dream.
From a popularity perspective, yes. From an artist that has, what, 18 months of credibility with the public?
Maybe, but Katy Perry, even Teenage Dream, which was what, 2012?
2010. Yeah.
You know, even that, you know, she came off of I Kissed a Girl and some of those other songs that were big hits before that. She didn't come totally out of nowhere. It's just at that moment, she was the biggest star in the world. And I think by the time she did the Super Bowl, you know, she had been eclipsed by Taylor Swift and some others. And so, and we can get into Kendrick and this year. That's why I really love the Kendrick pick for this year. Nobody is hotter than Kendrick, you know, again, maybe with the exception of Taylor Swift right now. And I think to be able to have an act sort of at the peak of their powers, as opposed to, let's say, when Maroon 5 did the Super Bowl, the peak of Maroon 5, right? Even when the Rolling Stones.
Girls and all Like You is in songs about Jane. Is right, that what we're saying?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think to be able to put your finger on the pulse, like, it's not always possible. I get it. And sometimes, like the J-Lo, Shakira, Miami thing, I think it made a lot of sense, even though, you know, they weren't like at the peak of their popularity, but they're more established. But to be able to have somebody who's established who is happening to have a really big moment, like Kendrick, I think that's the best possible thing you can do. And you can kind of engineer it a little bit. The next time Beyonce does the Super Bowl, which there will be a next time, I would be shocked if there's not, right? I think there had been a moment where the halftime show fell back into being a little less relevant than it had been. And it's an echo of the past, right? To go way back, let's say before the early 90s, the Super Bowl halftime show was like marching bands and ice dancing or something. You know, they had these like kind of corny novelty things happening. And, you know, I'm all for a good college marching band, but it's not the same as Michael Jackson performing in 1993, which
was
really
game changer.
That was a huge game changer. And just that moment, I think it was at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, you know, he's like shot out of a cannon and he just stands
there.
It was at 90 seconds or something, just completely silent and still. And you think about, I mean, what a bold move as a performer. The Super Bowl halftime show is a whole different ball game. And I think that was probably around the time that the NFL, you know, realized that not only can we get the biggest acts in the world, but we don't have to pay them, because even the biggest acts in the world, there's nowhere else they can get this kind of exposure.
It's like one of the few platforms where you can actually say that doing this like free for exposure is actually beneficial for your career. Let's take a break for our chart metric stat of the week. Shaboozy's A Bar song, Tipsy, has been blowing up this year, 17 weeks as the number one song on the Billboard Hot 100. And ever since the song started to take off, I wanted to know, how much did Jaquan come up? Because this song interpolates his 2004 hit, Tipsy. I wanted to hear one of those stories, like when Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars and Mark Ronson had blown up in 2014. We had heard about how Trinidad James got paid because that song interpolated Trinidad James's hit, All Gold Everything. Well, Jaquan, like Trinidad James, did confirm that he did get a, quote, crazy percentage, end quote. And not only that, but his original song, Tipsy, jumped on U.S. radio play. It was getting around 35 streams on terrestrial radio in the months before A Bar Song to over 150 daily plays in August 2024. Once again, the power of music. You make a good hit, people will want to sample, interpolate it, and come back to it time and time again. Let's get back to the episode.
The Super Bowl is maybe the lone exception to that. The halftime show is the biggest stage in music, and they say that for a reason.
And I think with this particular deal too, so this was a 5-year, $25 million partnership. Part of it was the Super Bowl halftime show and the Roc Nation helping out with that from a marketing and entertainment perspective. But there's also the social justice aspect of it. And that was clearly tapped into the same stuff that Robert Kraft had reached out to Jay-Z about. And of course, Jay-Z had had his stances about the NFL. And from a cultural perspective, there were a lot of people in hip hop, R&B, and black culture that had put the NFL to the side. There were certain people that didn't want anything to do with it. So they see the largest influential figure in hip hop now doing a partnership, there are a lot of people that had question marks with it. And I think additionally, with some of the questions that Jay-Z had gotten at that press conference, maybe it was from Charlamagne or from some of the others that had asked him about like how he looks at the two of these things together. One of the things he had said was, we have to move past kneeling. And that was a quote that had made the rounds because people took that as he is dismissing what Colin Kaepernick stood up for. So that, I think, echoes some of the controversy and some of the things that had surrounded it. And it was probably one of the first heel turns I had seen of people starting to look at Jay-Z and have more critical discussions about wealth and billionaire status and black excellence. And where 8 years ago, him and Kanye West are doing Otis, and they made a whole album about how rich and wealthy they are. And we celebrated it because the culture was just in a different spot at that particular moment.
Yeah. And just to go back to that moment when Jay-Z did this deal, and there've always been these whispers of finally selling out. And I think there was, yeah, definitely some more conversation around that. Is he sort of playing into the hands of the NFL? Are they using him to do whatever the equivalent of greenwashing is with race, you know, that kind of thing? But I think he made a pretty compelling case, though, that change can occur in different ways. And he's an incrementalist, and he believes that having a seat at the table and changing the makeup of who's sitting around with Robert Kraft and, you know, all these guys, that's where you start to make progress. And that's, you know, the path toward having the first black owner of an NFL team and how you start to get the ownership structure of the NFL to more fully resemble the demographics of America. And we're a really long ways from that. But you got to get to see the table first. And I think that's what he was trying to say.
And that whole debate reminded me of debates that have been happening a hundred years before that with Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois about how do black people in America prosper with the system? Do you work within the system or do you challenge the status quo? So Jay-Z has been vocal about how he sees things. And again, that doesn't mean that both of these can't coexist. It's helpful to have people that are marching, kneeling, or doing the social activism in some type of way. Social activism also requires capital, also requires those things. So for him to be like, hey, look at my track record, look at the things I'm actually doing, what are you all doing? I know the tone of it and how he delivered it may have came across a bit like, you know, all right, well, if you're not giving as much money that I'm giving, then you shouldn't be talking. But I think, again, you know, we've been having the debate about how does progress happen? You need both.
Yeah, or Malcolm versus Martin, or but then there's this other path, which is sort of the Jay-Z path, and it's the business path. And I think that it's obviously easier to be cast as a sellout if you go that way.
Yeah, definitely. Now, there have been 5 shows since Roc Nation has taken over, and we will see the 6th one this coming year. But in 2020, you had J-Lo and Shakira in Miami. In 2021, you had The Weeknd, that was in Tampa. 2022, in LA, you had the Hip Hop Ensemble, Snoop, Dr. Dre, Mary J. Blige, 50, Eminem, Kendrick, Anderson .Paak as well. So that was there's a lot of people there. 2023, you had Rihanna in Phoenix. 2024, we just had Usher in Vegas. And then now for this next one, we'll have Kendrick Lamar in New Orleans. So those have been the slate. Definitely a big shift of what we've seen, because now we've seen a big shift towards R&B, hip hop, Latin culture. He is now working with Jesse Collins, who is well known as a producer for the Emmys, the Grammys, so many award shows, and he's now working with the NFL on the Super Bowl halftime show. So they've really stepped up the product to make it what it is.
Yeah. And it's remarkable when you think about just the logistics that go into it. You have to set up a stadium level show. You're talking U2 or Taylor Swift. They've got like 50, 60 trucks, like semi trucks full of shit that they're bringing into the stadiums. You got to set this up in what, like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then break it down. And you have only less than 15 minutes to actually do the show. I mean, it's just like such a colossal undertaking without messing up the field that this is going to be playing on. So just the sheer quick turnaround time, the limited time you have up there, it's a pretty incredible feat. But even with the hip hop extravaganza in LA, that felt like a coherent thought, not just some mishmash of big names. It made sense. And they had this great set, and it was like 50 Cent was upside down. And it's really hard to jump around too much in 15 minutes and still have a moment that feels like distinct. And I think they've done a great job of doing that and not trying to pander and get a little bit of everybody and then just kind of have a mishmash that turns it into something kind of forgettable, less than the sum of the parts, you know.
We've come a long way since those MTV era Super Bowl shows, right? With Aerosmith and NSYNC and Kid Rock and all of those mishmash artists together. Nelly was in two of them around that time frame. And of course, the Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson one. So we've definitely came a long way from there. I don't think that Jay-Z would have came out the gate with the Dr. Dre Snoop Dogg LA ensemble one, because from the people I've talked to, that took some convincing to get on, right? Because it was always, you could have a hip hop artist thrown in, but it can never be like the main thing. There was always some concern that people in the league had. But again, the relationships and who's saying it, Jay's able to go in and say, hey, no, like, trust me, this will work. Watch the response. You did the J-Lo and Shakira one first. You did the Weeknd one after that. And then, you know, that gives you the leverage to be like, hey, we're doing a good job. Now you can lean in and do that type of show. Now you can lean in and have a solo hip hop headliner, which they've never had before.
Yeah. And that's the incrementalist approach that we talked about before, right? Jay could have tried to do a Cash Money Miami Super Bowl right off the bat, right? People are talking about, why isn't Lil Wayne there in New Orleans? Cash Money, Young Money, all those folks, they moved their operations to Miami after the hurricane from New Orleans. So he could have led with that. But I think he was reading the room and like wading into the waters of hip hop with all these old guys, these old white guys who still thought that you needed to have some white pop star on the stage. And then you get like a featured verse from a rapper, almost like music was whatever it was 15 years ago when people were still not buying hip hop as the number one musical genre in the entire world, which the numbers bear it out. And so I think he's been like leading these guys deeper and deeper into hip hop and getting the owners more comfortable with it. And yeah, like you say, I think that's part of the reason why you're not getting any blowback on having the first solo hip hop headliner. And actually, most of the blowback is coming from the hip hop world because it's not Lil Wayne. So
the fact that we are now in a position where people are upset that the Super Bowl halftime show has a solo hip hop headliner that is not the person that they wish it was. Let's take a step back and say that we wouldn't even be in a position to argue about this if someone like Jay-Z wasn't in that position. We can get into some of the criticisms about certain things on the Roc Nation side for sure, but let's not forget that. That clearly wasn't a thing. People weren't upset when Beyonce was named the Super Bowl halftime show performer, the 2013 Super Bowl show, and I didn't hear people being like, oh, why didn't Wayne do it then? And Wayne was hotter in 2013 than he is going to be in 2025 for this one.
The Super Bowl is an overwhelmingly national and international audience, and to base the halftime show on local music, they want to grow the game nationally and internationally. And the best way to do that is to get the biggest star. I love Lil Wayne, but he's not the biggest star right now. And I think they should find a way for Kendrick to bring him out. And I've gone on record saying that I think Jay-Z's going to try to engineer some kind of Drake-Kendrick truce at the Super Bowl. And then maybe you bring out Wayne and like some of the other Cash Money folks. I know things have been a little rocky amongst that group over the years, but like, what a moment that would be if you do it as a surprise. You have the reconciliation, you have some kind of mini reunion thing. That's how I would be thinking about it. It's not like an either or. It's like you get the biggest star and then you save the lesser star in terms of current commercial viability for an epic surprise as part of this grand reconciliation. That's how I would do it. And whether or not it happens, I bet Jay-Z is investigating that as we speak.
I love Lil Wayne. He's in my top five. But from a live performance perspective of what we can expect reliably now in 2024, I don't think that is quite at the level of what we are able to see with Kendrick Lamar, who's literally about to also be the first hip-hop artist to go on a solo stadium tour. As a solo headliner doing a worldwide stadium tour, we haven't seen a hip-hop artist do that. So being able to highlight that person, it's hard to knock the opportunity here.
Yeah, and let's not forget the NFL is the NFL. And above all, you have to be able to be 100% certain that the headliner is going to show up. They're going to show up on time. There's all that stuff. And my level of faith in Kendrick Lamar on that front is 100%. And he's got a great team around him. And it's very professional and buttoned up. And I can see them not having that same level of faith in Wayne. And that's not to put him down, but it's just, if you want somebody to like pick you up from the airport, are you asking Kendrick or are you asking Lil Wayne? I'm asking Kendrick.
I can't disagree with that. I can't disagree with that. We should talk a bit about Roc Nation itself, because I know we've talked a lot about Jay-Z. We talked a lot about the NFL. And of course, Roc Nation is technically the group that is on the receiving end of this. And I think a lot of the work that we've seen on more of the general marketing stuff has been what we've seen from the now CEO of Roc Nation, which is Desiree Perez. And Desiree has probably been the person that's been most involved with the league itself, has built up a relationship with Roger Goodell. And there actually have been a few investigative pieces that have dug into some of that and have found a few things that they've had questions about. And I do want to be very careful here because certain things are allegations that were not necessarily proven or unproven. But overall, the sentiment was from certain unnamed sources was that they felt that given the stance that the NFL had with regards to social justice, they leaned heavily on Roc Nation. People internally felt like Roc Nation used that as an opportunity to increase their leverage and become the unappointed marketing arm of the NFL and insert itself in particular situations, most notably firings of John Gruden and also eventually the dismissal of Dan Snyder as the ownership of the Washington football team. On the John Gruden side, there was discussions about Perez and her relationship that she had with Dan Snyder because she was on the board for the Washington football team at the time, and apparently some leaked emails that may have gone through, and Gruden and his camp felt like the reporters had gotten it directly from Perez because of some favorable articles that they had written about Perez at the time. Meanwhile, Desiree Perez has rejected and claimed that none of that is true. And then, of course, there were tie-ins as well when Dan Snyder eventually left the ownership of the Commanders and then sold that team as well. So there's been a few things that are in flux in there. And the general sentiment is that Roc Nation itself had used its platform and used the leverage. And because Goodell himself necessarily didn't want to push back because they felt like they had to acquiesce just given the stance that the league was in at the time to then have her come in. And although a lot of that is separate from the halftime show itself, it still is connected to the broader you leveraging Roc Nation and leveraging culture as a brand and then having them be seen as part of what's leading your social justice initiatives. A lot of people have said that the relationship has clearly improved since then. And obviously Goodell has renewed the deal. A lot of the things I'm discussing are things that happened in 2020 and 2021. There's literally one person that said they, quote, felt Roc Nation had too much influence in the NFL, which ironically feels like a common thing that you end up hearing in different ways. We heard people said it after the Megan Thee Stallion Tory Lanez thing when Tory Lanez went to jail, and there's that famous quote of Tory Lanez's dad where he's like, "Roc Nation, you will crumble." I don't know if you saw that. It was like some viral video that went around. He's like yelling outside of the courtroom. And then after, I guess to bring it all full circle, after they announced that Kendrick Lamar was the halftime show performer and none of the Young Money crew was in there, Nicki Minaj starts calling out Roc Nation and starts being like, "Oh, y'all thought this was cool. You just wanted to go to brunch," calling out the Roc Nation brunch that happens every year before the Grammys. So in these different pockets, you keep hearing that people feel like Roc Nation has too much influence, which is an interesting thing. And it's a critique, but it's something that's worth mentioning with all of this.
When you hear it from those NFL folks, there's definitely a little more than a whiff of racism to it. If you believe what Jay said, that's like his motivation for getting into this is to change reality on the inside. And yeah, you know, if he's doing that job and doing it, like, there are probably going to be some cranky white people on the inside. And on the Washington front, I'm sorry. It's like, guys, don't be despicable humans. Desiree is an interesting figure, and she is definitely have been controversial on other points, and she's a force to be reckoned with. And I'm sure it's not always like a warm and fuzzy kind of situation. And I'm not saying she's perfect either, but when these sorts of changes start to happen, there's like a predictable reaction from some folks.
Yeah. Some of the reporting too had brought up that her involvement with, as a Yankees fan, you'd appreciate this, but when Alex Rodriguez was suspended and then she was like part of that, like fighting that with Reed Smith, the law firm, and there was this whole thing there, and people in baseball felt like that was an issue because they were coming after Rob Manfred, the commissioner. Certain aspects of these things are hearsay and you're only hearing one side of it. On the other hand, it's like, all right, you brought folks in to disrupt the system. It's going to naturally make people feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. Jay-Z is a billionaire. You're not bringing in like some radical firebrand. It all goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning. It's incremental change. And I think even incremental change feels threatening to some.
And to be fair, still a billionaire that has less money than all 32 of those owners. Talk about people that have too much power. I rarely hear people complain about the power that Robert Kraft or Jerry Jones have, two of the most powerful owners in the league. Another thing that we should probably talk a bit about is the sponsor piece of this. In 2022, it was announced that Apple Music would be the sponsor for the Super Bowl halftime show. It's worth noting that this deal doesn't have anything to do directly with Roc Nation and its partnership with the NFL, but they all have to work together. So the first show that they worked on was the past two shows, actually. So the one with Rihanna, 2023, 2024, they did the one with Usher, and then they'll do this one moving forward. So that's a five-year deal for $50 million each per year. So it's 10 times as large as the Roc Nation deal itself. The NFL had wanted to work directly with a content company. Sports Business Journal had some pieces breaking it down where they said they were looking at Apple, they're looking at Netflix, they're looking at Amazon. They wanted to go that route because there was an opportunity to also create content and do year-long things around the event itself, which is very different from the sponsors that have been doing it before. 10 years before Apple, it was Pepsi. That deal was brought in when Beyonce had done that Super Bowl, because Beyonce, I think it had a $50 million deal that she had just signed with Pepsi around 2012, 2013 timeframe. And then before that, you had Bridgestone, the tires, like for 3 years, right? So you go from random CPG to Pepsi to now Apple. Honestly felt eerily like that Steve Jobs quote where he's talking to John Sculley and he's like, do you want to continue selling soda water? Do you want to come change the world? John Sculley, of course, was CEO of Pepsi, and then he becomes CEO of Apple.
I think there are a few interesting angles here, and I think it makes a lot of sense for all involved. The fascinating part for me as a career-long Jay-Z observer, Jay-Z has this company called Tidal, and I know that he sold most of it. Apple Music is a direct competitor. Like, how does that work? That's very interesting. It's a classic Jay move, right? He goes and invests in something, builds it up, sells it or sells most of it, and then goes like on to the next competitor. I wonder if you think about everybody in music has to be cool with Apple pretty much, right? Like, Apple Music is in the business of wanting artists to be happy with them, and Apple Music does not work unless the vast majority of artists are on the platform. Whereas Pepsi is like, you're either a Pepsi artist or a Coke artist. And that there have been rumors.
Caused some issues.
Yeah. And particularly there's been some thought that's why Taylor Swift has not done the Super Bowl. Was this all just a big ploy to get Taylor Swift? I don't know. At least it opens the door to bringing in people who were not like on the other team. And it really opens up the entire musical universe. That's something to think about with the Apple Music side of things as well.
Because Apple's in the unique spot where they can be large enough and ubiquitous enough where even if you don't use Apple Music, you may use an Apple product. Even if the rates that they actually are paying on their paid tier may be very similar with any other service with their paid tier, they may not have the stigma like as others. For instance, if Spotify was to be the sponsor for the show, I think that would probably cause a few more PR headlines than this would have caused from that perspective. So that's one thing. And then two, Apple also has the money, because for them, they don't need to run Apple Music at a great profit. In fact, it can honestly just be a loss leader for everything else that Apple is selling that is actually lucrative. iPhone 16 Pros and AirPods and all of those other lines of business that make a lot more revenue before you even get to the cost, but make a lot more revenue than Apple Music does. So there's a bit of a connection there. And I'd heard that Amazon was also aggressively looking at that, and they've also clearly been active. They had done the pop out with Kendrick Lamar. They've done a few other live streams. They did that Kanye and Drake one from a couple of years ago where Jay Prince brought them together to shake hands, just do this benefit concert and stuff. Netflix would have been interesting. I think that's a little bit of a different play there and stuff. But yeah, at the end of the day, there's few companies that have $50 million willing to put towards this type of thing.
Yeah, totally. And I think Amazon would have also made a lot of sense, and they're doing that thing. I don't know if you ever watch this year on Thursday Night Football, at the end of the game, they go straight to the concert, which I think is a cool thing. I don't know, maybe they thought that was like a more effective ongoing way to engage with music and NFL, or maybe they were looking at the early returns of that and they were like, yeah, this is cool, but it's not worth what we would have to pay to toward the halftime show.
At some point, you just have to make a call, right? Yeah. Because all of these companies are partners. And does this just give you a different touch point than you would have had? If you're NFL, you already had the Black Friday game. You already have Thursday Night Football. You don't have anything with Apple Music, right? So just get a touch point in there and then see where it goes. Obviously, with this show being 5 more years, at least under the Roc Nation NFL contract, you have the Kendrick year, you'll have 4 years after that. Although it's probably impossible to predict who will end up popping out for a halftime show, because some of these have been timely, some of these have been more legacy acts that just happened to have a big year, like Usher last year. But are there names that you almost expect to see come through? And if it's any hint, I can share a few additional locations. So 26 will be in San Francisco, 27 will be in LA, and then 28 will be in Atlanta.
Okay. I do have some predictions.
Okay.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Drum roll. I think San Francisco will be Green Day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're an Oakland-based band. And I felt this way for a decade, but they are going to be the Rolling Stones in however many, a couple decades from now. They're going to be that band that tours for 50 years, like into their 70s and whatever. I saw them at Citi Field in August, and like, you would not know that they were, how old are they? Like 40, 50, something like that at this point?
Billy Joe is like in his 50s.
Yeah, yeah. But he still looks like he's 25.
Yeah.
And he still acts. He still runs around the stage. He's got so much energy. He's a fantastic showman. They're a freaking fantastic band. And maybe I'm contradicting some of the things that I said before in the show, which is we can't have like another rock group that's not at the peak of their career. It doesn't have to be local. But you do have to change things up at some point. And I think Green Day will be coming up on another moment of national relevance, perhaps as they did during the Bush years with American Idiot. I think they're going to make a Trump album. I think they're going to be at the heart of it. And it may be too political for the NFL. I don't know. But they can definitely hold the crowd in a stadium. And there hasn't been a real rock band in many years performing at that show. That's, I think, one option for San Francisco.
It's a good one. I didn't think of the Green Day angle. I fully get why. Have a feeling that Jay-Z is going to ride out this hip-hop R&B lane until it goes through. But if you're going to go with the rock band, I think that makes 100% sense. I saw them at the Fillmore in San Francisco in the summer and had a similar feeling. I was like, this is amazing. Like, they are still doing it, still high energy. I did wonder, will we eventually see Drake do one of these? I know it's been rumored and discussed a few times. There were people that had said that Drake was asked at particular points to do the halftime show. I've talked to a few people about that and heard a few conflicting things. I think that if anything, I don't know if he was asked to be like the solo headliner specifically, and maybe that's a very different conversation than being like, oh, can you do it with this other person, or can you be part of this ensemble group? I think that has been probably a reason why people have issues. You even heard that J-Lo had some frustrations there, where she, in one of those documentaries she had, she was like, no disrespect to Shakira, but I wanted my own halftime show. So there's a lot of egos at play, right? Taylor feels inevitably it's going to have to happen at some point, right? And I think she's always, just staying present has always been a big thing for her. So I think if there's any slight moment that you think that she's going to dip at any point, like, oh, that's the year I'm going to do it. Let me just stay ahead of the attention. And I don't think she's dipped quite yet. We'll see how people respond to the Tortured Poets Department and what she may release after that. But yeah.
The odds are she does one of these next three Super Bowls. And the question is just which one. And frankly, if you're Jay-Z, you probably have to make her the first phone call every year until she does one. I don't think there's really any way that she falls off to some point that she's not a great Super Bowl headliner. I could see certainly Billie Eilish, Olivia Rodrigo. I've seen both of them live at MSG, and man, can they hold that room. So I would have total faith in them doing NFL, but is that what the league is listening to? They're not listening to Green Day either, but
they just have songs that feel like they're part of 90s and 2000s radio in general. I could see Olivia Rodrigo. Billie Eilish, I don't know about. I think that she is obviously great and like a great performer. Are there enough songs to like do that? I don't know.
Do we see a country singer anytime soon? Maybe for an Atlanta Super Bowl. We're talking 3-4 years down the line. Who's going to be the biggest act? Does somebody like Olivia Rodrigo turn into like a Taylor Swift level superstar by then? There's a lot of time to play with. Although I think if you want to do local for Atlanta, if you could get an actual Outkast reunion at the Super Bowl, that would be pretty epic.
That would be cool. Yeah.
And I think that would be unique and local and hip hop and stadium level if you could tie all that together.
Do you feel that the five, soon to be six performers they've had, everyone has been A-list?
A-plus list? I don't think Usher is really like on the Jay-Z, Beyonce level at this point in his career. I think he's a great performer. I think he put on a really good show, but I think he's like A-minus list. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that the fact that it was in Vegas was a big push with this, I think. And I do think that his stock went up with that residency. So I do think those two things worked in his favor. The thing is, he does have the hits that I think justified it, which I think it could have been easy to forget if it weren't for that residency. I do think that the production value of that was really good. You were able to bring back all these artists, and I felt like I was back in like 2003, right? Or and also felt like I was back in 97 and 01 with just different parts of that. So I do think that Usher did a good job. The Weeknd was also one that was interesting because Blinding Lights was just such a huge song. And I think After Hours dominated the pandemic time era. Just given everything that was happening, yeah, this guy is having his moment. And there's an opportunity to highlight that. I don't know if that would have happened in another year. That's not a knock at The Weeknd. I think, obviously, the guy's huge. He made a ton of money from that tour and everything else that he did afterward and stuff. But it was a very timely move. You could have gotten J-Lo and Shakira any year that it was in Miami. You could have had the hip hop ensemble any year that it was in LA. Because if you didn't do that 3 years ago, you could have done it in 27. But certain ones only make sense in certain years.
There are only so many cities that the Super Bowl can be in. You need a dome. You probably need a warm weather dome, or you need an outside warm weather place.
Well, Goodell wants to take this thing international, right?
Oh my God, yeah.
If he could have a Super Bowl London, in London, he would definitely consider it.
That would be cool. But for the most part, it's pretty reliably. It's like Atlanta, LA, New Orleans, Miami, right? Like, I know we had that one in New York.
Bruno Mars.
Yeah.
And Red Hot Chili Peppers, talking about random mashups. But that was that year.
That was a cool show, though. There was some thought, like, are the drums going to shatter because it's so cool? I don't know. You just don't have to worry about those things indoors. But how many LA-centric Super Bowls can you do when the Super Bowl is in LA every 5 years or something?
That's why, like, people got a bit too hung up on that. You got to break through. You're only going to have Rihanna if you have the show in Barbados. Like, right, it doesn't work that way. Right. So it'll be very interesting to follow how it goes. Interested to see what the next 5 years of this partnership looks like. It really does look like money is truly an afterthought. And as long as the Roc Nation side, the Jay-Z side, and the NFL side continue, it works. And I think the NFL, we probably didn't touch on this as much, but the public image on a lot of this stuff is definitely improved, where in most cases, they've taken a stronger stance against any of its players that are conducting domestic violence issues. They put in safer protocols for concussions, even though some of them still happen and there's still some questionable things that may happen, but they've managed it in a better place than it once was. And I do think that at least from what we saw under the Biden years, the stance that they've had on social justice has been improved, but a lot unknown moving forward on that front.
Yeah. And that is a wild card going forward in our current political moment, for sure. But I think as far as Jay-Z is concerned and the NFL is concerned, the goal of this was to make the halftime show extremely culturally relevant, and even more than it had been recently, which was to say it was already the biggest night, the biggest stage in music. I think the very fact that we're sitting here talking about it, it shows the cultural relevance, and that it shows that they've succeeded, both Jay-Z and the NFL, in doing what they wanted to do. If you're debating who's going to be picked and all that, that's just free advertising for them, right? And that's exactly what they're hoping for.
It speaks to where we are. We've come a long way from the only time that this was discussed, people being like, this show wasn't that good. Well, Zach, thank you. This was fun.
Yes, sir. Great to be here.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.